Welcome to Corporate Cafecito, a podcast based on professional development, career growth, and respecting our cultural identity. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Corporate Cafecito. Yo soy Nayeli Suarez Guest, and today I have Carlos Diaz joining me all the way from sunny Southern California. What city are you in?
I'm in Anaheim.
Anaheim. Awesome. So, Carlos, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself to get started?
Yeah, definitely. It's been good to meet you. So, I am in Southern California. I'm in Anaheim. I'm an entrepreneur, do digital marketing for B2C businesses. Been out here in Southern California since 98, grew up in the Bay Area. That's where I went to school, was raised, graduated, et cetera. Started my career out there and then moved out here in 98. Figured I'd always go back, you know, still have family there, but, you know, life takes over. You meet someone, get a house, have a kid.
It goes by fast. History. Yeah.
It wasn't quick, but.
I always joke, I moved to Texas and I came back plus two. I met my husband down there. Wow. And then I had my first son down there. And then I had my second son up here. But it's always funny because like in our industry, you know, we always joke about like you have a kid like from all these different states. So it's, you know, we're a family of four, but only two of us were born in the same state.
Right.
So the other day, you and I were talking, and one of the things that we talked about was trusting yourself versus waiting for validation from others. And that's when I was like, you know what, that's going to be our episode, because I think a lot of times, especially in our culture, where we have the culture of quedando bien, we look for that validation from other people. And so that just really spoke to my heart.
Yeah, it can be a cultural thing, but it's also a business thing.
Yeah.
Where I look at the, sometimes it's the curse of wisdom. You don't know what you know. Mm-hmm. Or you had mentioned like an imposter syndrome. It's almost the opposite of that, where you're like, yeah, but if I talk about it, will it resonate? Will people gravitate towards it? And I'm guilty of, I've always been an entrepreneur at heart, even though I worked in the corporate world early on. But it was one of those things where I felt like, well, yeah, but what if I'm not, what if it's not valuable to somebody? Or what if you almost want someone's validation and know like, okay, yeah, I can speak about this. But if you have experience in something, and especially if you have proven methods, et cetera, I mean, definitely shine the light on yourself, talk about it. Because if you, for example, if you're a realtor and someone else is a realtor and one of you is online and you both know the same thing, you both could talk about the same thing, but only one person speaking to from the outside looking in, to those who don't know about it, you're the expert. Right. Just for the simple fact that you're talking
about it. That you're out there.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of times we don't want to speak up because, and I have this complex of not wanting to feel stupid. I feel stupid all the time. And one of the things I repeat always is like, you can feel stupid, but don't stay stupid. And we sometimes are like, if I ask this question, I'm going to look dumb, or I'm sure everyone else knows it. So one, I think we think everything that we know is stuff everyone else knows, and everything that everyone else knows is stuff that we don't know. And so we're embarrassed to kind of seek that out because we're like nervous that if we say something, they're going to think we're stupid. And also if we say something that, you know, everyone, that we're stating the obvious.
Yeah. But you never know who doesn't know something. And especially if you're that person that is always asking questions, you're someone who's always learning.
Right.
So people might look at you like, what do you, what do you know that I don't? Or what are you looking to learn that, you know, is that gap? And that's going to make you more effective than other people around you. I just always feel that talking, asking questions, reading books, all that should be stepping stones to making yourself a little bit better.
I remember when my son was in like, I want to say it was kindergarten, or it might've even been like first grade. And his teacher said that one of the things she really liked about my son was that he always put his hand up. And even when he got the answer wrong, he put his hand up again for the next question.
That's awesome.
And I was like, good. Like that's, I didn't want him to like, que no sé cómo iba. Because he doesn't know an answer, or like that he'd be embarrassed in front of other people. And so I think there's this like culture of like, I don't know if shame is the right word, but it's like, I don't want to ask a question or answer a question and then start doubting myself if I really know the answer.
Right. Yeah. And, I just thought of something too, mm-hmm. where it's a little bit, as you get older, but I think it's a little bit of, because we all read, we watch social media, we watch webinars, right? Mm-hmm. To make ourselves better on whatever it might be. But there's knowledge and then there's applied knowledge. And I think applied knowledge is where you really get that affirmation you're looking for, instead of looking it from someone else. Is if you're just going to, I mean, I got a bunch of books I read. I read as often as I can. But if I just read, take notes, and that's it, what good does it do me?
Right, you're not using it.
I'm not going to apply it.
Yeah, there's, I always talk about skill sets, right? And so I talk about it in three ways. It's the actual skill set of like knowing how to do something, having the tool set to do it, and then having the mindset to do it. And so I almost take turns in how I approach my growth or like my development, where I like learn a skill, but then I also have to change my mindset about how I approach that skill. Cause to your point, right, there's knowledge and applied knowledge. If you don't use it, you know, like, and also sometimes saying like what I don't want to learn, cause you know, I love arroz con gandules. I cannot make it. I don't know why my hands always make Mexican rice. When I try to make Puerto Rican rice, it doesn't come out. And so one of my aunts, she's like, I'll show you. And I'm like, no, just make it for me.
Right.
Like, I'm not going to take that knowledge. I'm going to just come over to your house. And I think a lot of times we try to develop like a lot of skill sets, and then, you know, el que mucho abarca poco aprieta. And so you don't become really good at anything because you don't apply it.
Right. And I've even mentioned one time I was having a conversation with a friend, and, you know, you said the word mindset. And mm-hmm. to me, I think mindset's when you're in the zone of things. And so whether you're a surfer, like you're not thinking, you're in the mindset, you're in the zone. Mm-hmm. You know, Kobe Bryant, he's in the zone. Professionals, they get in the zone. Someone's space planning, a floor plan, like a designer, architect. I think that's a mindset for a lot of people, the preliminary stage we're talking about right now. I think you have to have a mind shift first. And once you have that mind shift that you know, here's where I'm at, but here's where I want to be, and you decide to change, I feel that's one of the most important phases or stages in your own mind. Because once you get in there and you have applied knowledge, you read, you're more educated, you're more confident, you're validated in whatever means that might be, I think that's when you're in that mindset now where things are flowing at you're in a flow and things are going a lot smoother at that point.
So I love the mind shift, and I want to get back to that because I was reading a book, and I'm going to be really honest. I listen to books because I can't read. I've always had bad reading and comprehension skills, test scores. I don't absorb. I'm a visual learner.
Sometimes,
yeah. And then I'll like read it, and then I go back and I have to read it again and read it again. And sometimes even like take notes. But now with like the invention of Audible, it's so much easier for me to hear stuff because once I hear things, I almost commit it to memory. But one of the books that I was listening to recently said that, you know, sometimes we have like all these expectations that have been built on us. And so every day we approach every day with like the trauma and the goals and everything from the past versus letting the future you pull you towards your future. And that one just hit me so hard because I think a lot of times, you know, as we're doing things and I'll bring the cultural aspect, like go to school, do this, get married, have a kid. Like we have these outlines almost dictated of what our life should look like. And then, you know, if we think about our future self and who we want to be, that visual image of having that person pull me versus the people behind me push me was like, it hit differently.
It does. Yeah. And depending on where everyone's at, I mean, you and I talked about, you know, spiritual attainment, you know, that whatever level it might be in someone's life, whether it's just prayer or mm-hmm. someone gets into deep manifestation and meditation. But I totally agree with you on that you have to have a clear vision of what you want and how you want to be, how you want to operate, et cetera, to get there. There's a book by Cameron Harold called Vivid Visions mm-hmm. or Vivid Visioning. I've read it. I don't think it's here. No, it's in my other room. But that one is definitely about like you said, visioning what you want to be, where you want to go, and then operating like that, as if it's already happened. Because a lot of people, there's a time and place for the present moment, and I'm a strong believer in that. I could talk about that for 3 hours, but there is something about.
We don't have that long.
Yeah, but there is something with forecasting, if you will, the way you want to look, operate, etc. Because otherwise, people they get stuck in the how am I going to do it. Whereas if you know what it's going to look like and what you want to do, and you work towards that, you figure out the how as you're right. getting.
Yeah.
And the other thing I would mention too is sharing that with other people. So get out of your mind, and if anything, write it down first. Make it tangible. Right. And then share it with other people. For example, you're the boss and you have people at work. If they're just focused on deliverables for today and tomorrow, but
yeah,
you're
never going to be. Yeah.
Yeah. They need to see what the big picture is. And the benefits to that is everyone is looking out the same window. Everyone agrees what they're going to go towards. People will help you accomplish your goals faster, and people mm-hmm. will help you accomplish your goals, period, rather than you trying to do it all by yourself. So the episode you had, the podcast about, you know, finding your cheerleaders or being your own cheerleader, that one hit with me because I was like, yeah, you have to, not for the sense of validation, but just for the sake of getting it out there and having those around you that believe in you already help you get to the finish line quicker.
So there's been a lot of studies done about when you say something out loud, you're more likely to do it. And, you know, it's like that verbal commitment. And so like, if you tell people you're going to do something, now you're accountable to the people that you told. And so I try to do that. Then there's sometimes when I'm like, yeah, I didn't do that, but I have a new dream. And I think it's important not only to like tell people, but also remind your cheerleaders, like what they're cheering for, and what you're doing next. So they could cheerlead you there too. And understanding, like, sometimes you're going to fail and you have to go back to those cheerleaders to remind you that at least you tried.
Yeah. And you know, to go full mm-hmm. circle on the validation, it's good to share it. I totally agree with you. You have to put it out there, share it, but don't put such a high stake at, oh no, I didn't do it. And I told them I would, or I said, I'm going to do this. And you know, what are they thinking now? We get so lost in what other people think about us. Ask yourself a question. When was the last time you thought about someone else? Like, oh, are they doing that? You know, like, you have your own life. So don't mm-hmm. feel like I said this and I bet they've been thinking about it for the past 2 weeks. No, they haven't. They've been living their life.
Yes. I love that you said that.
They're not focused on you that much.
I talk about that all the time. Like, we are not that important. Right. And sometimes we like, and so when we talk about validation from others, sometimes, you know, when we go to parties, and I remember my mom would be like, ¿vas a usar el mismo vestido? And I'm like, I don't think anyone remembers my vestido. And so if you see me, I'm usually in a black dress or a blue dress. And so my mom's like, which one are you going to wear? I'm like, pues el negro está sucio. So I'm going to wear the blue one. And so, like, part of that is also understanding that, like, you're right. Other people's world doesn't revolve around us. So whatever dress you wear, like, it's do it because what you want to wear, because it's what makes you comfortable. But don't assume that everyone's keeping, like, this mental inventory. And if they are, that's probably not someone you want to appease or try to impress.
Right. I totally agree. And that's some of the issues with social media. You know, everyone thinks like, oh no, but this and that. I, you know, as a marketer, I even tell people, repurpose it, like post it again. Mm-hmm. With Facebook stories, it's only there for 24 hours. 3 days later, post it again. Like, no one's going to remember. And so, you know, just go ahead and do it. In other words, there's two sides to that coin. Number one, go ahead and repurpose it. No one's mm-hmm. going to remember. And number two, just go ahead and do it. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it sticks or not.
Right.
But and you got to keep the action. You got to keep moving. Keep, you know, don't hold yourself in, don't idle. And otherwise you'll never make any traction.
So what does idling mean to you?
I think idling just is like a revolving door. You're thinking about things, but you're bottom line, you're not taking action. I think mm-hmm. when you take action, it has so many benefits to it. I think you're starting to move, number one, which is the opposite of idle. But number two, I gave a talk in Burbank one time, and we got deep into, you know, things like meditation, manifestation. But I talked about, someone brought up the law of attraction, and I said something.
I love the law of attraction.
Yeah. 80% of the room were like bamboozled. And I was like floored. How could you not see this? But I told them, I had a whiteboard and I wrote things out, and I wrote law of attraction. We were talking about it, but I underlined attract. And then I put a square around action. I said, there's two words in this word right here. You have to not only just hope, wish that it comes to you. You have to attract it, you know, mentally, put an affirmation that you want it, but then you have to take action. It's not going to fall in your lap. And half the room was like, oh my God, I never noticed that. And to me, I was like, wow, really? But it was good just to point it out. But you're right. You have to think, dream, journal, whatever it is. But then you also have to take action and move towards it. Almost like I took one step forward, and then the cosmic will take one step towards you. And you keep this dance going. And, you know, this dance becomes a rhythm. And you just become confident in what you're doing. And that vision becomes more realistic, in my opinion. And that's how you do accomplish what you want to do. You're not waiting on validation. You're not hoping. You're not just, you know, praying that it's going to land on your lap. Because what happens, in my opinion, is a lot of people do depend on that. When it doesn't happen, they feel, A, they failed, or two, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And I think the opposite.
I agree. And when we talk about idling, and part of the reason why I was like, what do you consider idle? And it's lack of action or movement or forward progression. You said the revolving door. I will say, I agree with that definition. For women, sometimes when we take not even a step back, maybe a step sideways, or stay in a job because we just had kids or we want to spend more time, like I want you to know that that's not idling. You're making a conscious decision to prioritize like your children, or, you know, like in the stages where we're at now, like taking care of my older parents, aging parents, you know, like it's not idle, because the, what you're imagining or what you're dreaming or what you're manifesting is like, it's not just a professional linear line. And right. Everything is part of that. So, you know, I've talked and coached a lot of women where they're like, well, you know, for this time, I wasn't participating in the workforce. It's like, no, for that time, you were creating amazing humans that, you know, you, and so when we hear idle, we think of like sitting at home doing nothing, or, you know, sometimes people take that approach of like, well, if I was at home with my kids, then I wasn't productive. And it's like, no, you were productive. You were productive in a different way. And those years where you're building your child's self-esteem and just nurturing and everything, right. Like that's not idle.
No, not at all. I think what, you know, some may look at as like a lateral move, you have conscious meaning behind it and decision-making behind it. So to me, right. I would never consider that this as an idle, right? To me, I think it's someone who's just, you know, they're just going through the motions for months or maybe even years. And you know what? And that's an actually great point, because when I moved down here, I had been working for about 4.5 years in Silicon Valley. And one day, I have no idea why. So this is when I was in the corporate world of commercial architecture. I started and I studied for commercial architecture. And one day I looked at the most senior person besides the owners ahead of me at the company. And I looked at him and I said, his name is Vince. And I said, that's going to be me in 20, 30 years. And a light bulb just went off. And I'm like, what am I doing? What do I like to do? What do I want to do like right now? And it just sparked. And I was into music at the time, and I did a lot of music. And I said, I'm just going to move closer to the music industry, Southern California. And within a month, I had already decided, looked in the LA Times, did an interview, et cetera. And that's why I moved down here rather than staying there, is because it was a decision of what I wanted to do. So idling to me would be someone, say, 4.5 years, right, into a career like I was. And if they don't reflect, they don't take time to reflect or even look back, like 4 years, what do I have to show for it, type of thing. And I think that fear of not having something to show for it is what drove me forward to like, well, just do something, do what you want to do. Don't just sit here for the next 10 years.
And also, if you think about like in 20, 30 years, you would be Vince. Like, you know, are you biding your time? Are you doing anything with those 20, 30 years? Could you be better than Vince? You know, and I remember I was part of a team and I worked for a guy named Fred. And I told him, I'm like, I'm leaving the team. I'm going to, you know, apply for this job. And he goes, why? And I go, because I don't want you to die. And that's the only way I'll get your spot. And so I think it's best for me to leave because I have other dreams. And, you know, if I stay here, I would be idle. I would be doing a job that I could do every day, but I wouldn't find any more growth or excitement from it.
Very polite.
Yeah.
But it's good you recognize that though.
Yeah. And like, if you would have stayed there for 20, 30 years, what if they said like, God, Carlos has been here 20, 30 years. And so we need a better Vince.
Yeah. And unless you're going to leverage that time for something, like you get the experience, like a psychiatrist, right? You get your degree, but you leverage 5 years of experience and then you open up your own practice or something. I mean, I could see that. There's a conscious decision behind it and you're making strategic moves.
Yeah, 1,000%. You know, when we talk about like who we want to be or this idea of trusting yourself, I often tell people like visualize yourself 100% like executing in excellence. Like if you have a big presentation or you're going to ask for a promotion or a raise, or you're going to do any of these things, like what does that look like in your head? And, you know, I tell them everything from like, what shoes are you wearing? You know, how's your hair? What jewelry are you wearing? How are you standing? Are you standing? Are you sitting? Like, what does it look like? What are you going to say? Some people are like, I don't like role playing. I'm like, you don't have to role play with me, but I want you to think about executing on all cylinders, feeling like you did amazing. Go through that in your head and dream about it, whatever you need to do, just get in that headspace so that when you go there, you could decide whether you made yourself proud y si pega bien y si no despegado estaba, but like visualize it all the way through and with every detail, so that you can, you know, show up and feel confident in yourself and trust yourself.
Yeah. One thing I've focused on a lot is if you're going to do something, especially if it involves work, a lot of people who work, I got a lot of friends that work in office space or warehouses, whatever, but don't just ask for something. Like in return, explain the value that you're going to bring them or the value that you have already brought in order to ask for that. And when you do that, it's not so much, the conversation isn't so much about, you know, here's what I want or what I like. It's more about this partnership that I have done this. I asked for XYZ, I've accomplished it, or, you know, I need the resources to do this. But it shows that you're invested in the business. And as an owner or a boss, I would be more like, this person sees the big picture versus I want a 3% raise to match, you know, the cost of living.
Right.
You know, the standard thing that most people would ask for.
I love that. I'm a big believer in telling everybody why we're doing something. And, you know, sometimes I'm like, just, you know, we're doing this because they've asked us to, and we have to. And sometimes I'm like, we're doing this because if we do this, then we could do this, this, and this. And I think when you understand the purpose, you're more eager to be a part of it because you understand like everything. And I think about the people who are gatekeepers who only give you like this much of the story or like telling you like, just do pull this report. You're like, well, why do you need that report? What are you going to do with the data? What are you going to do? And if they don't tell you, you feel kind of like almost left out or used, like you're not part of the team. You're just like the data puller.
Yeah. Yeah. And once someone leaves, you kind of figure everyone keeps in touch these days. And it's like, yeah, you left. Go be the recon man. If things are good over there, let me know. I'll go over there with you. So
yeah,
if you know, Steve Jobs had mentioned, you know, it's easy to hire someone, tell them what to do, but it's hard to hire someone and let them tell you what to do. But that, you know, why did you hire them? You hired them for a reason. They have an expertise. Let them do it because they probably do it better than you.
Yeah. I also, with my kids, I don't tell them what to do, but I tell them, like, for example, when we're cleaning the house, I'm like, help me clean the house. And they're like, what do I need to do? And I say, well, look around, you know what the house looks like when it's clean. If it doesn't look like that, then we have to do whatever it takes to get it to look like that again. And part of my reason is like, if I tell them throw out the garbage, they go throw out the garbage. If I tell them help me till it gets clean, they know what they have to do. And I see them folding blankets and doing all these things that maybe I wouldn't have even thought to ask. So when you bring people along and you tell them the purpose, they're probably not going to just pull the report. They're going to pull the report and then say like, and they found this to help you and this, or, you know, additional insights. They feel like they're part of it and they start contributing at a greater level.
Yeah. Exactly. If they explain to you why they're doing it, then you can pull that report along with anything else that's going to help them make a decision.
Yeah, absolutely. So
there's such a thing as good listeners, but there's such a thing as, you know, communication on the other end.
Yeah. You need both.
Yeah.
Cause if not, I mean, if you just tell someone something and you're just like, I just need this data set. Like I remember I had someone ask me like, can you pull down this and this and this and this? And I was like, that's the whole database. And I'm like, what are you going to do? He's like, well, I want to put it in Excel and I want to do this and this and this. And I was like, why don't we just ask the database to give you that instead of, you know, rebuilding a database? And it just blew his mind. Cause I was like, I'm not doing that work for you to play with it in Excel, because that's what this was built for.
I don't know how many friends tell me how colleagues pull reports out of software, CRM, SaaS, anything, and they export it, they cherry pick and they put it into an Excel sheet, that people still do that. And I'm like, why do you even have the software to begin with? But you're right. If you're paying for it, leverage it to you know, provide what the information you need.
Right.
Side story, but yeah, I even to this day, I can't believe as technological as the things are in software, how many people, you know, pull things and put it into their own little spreadsheet.
Yeah. And going back to like how we started, you know, that's part of like trusting yourself. It's you also have to trust yourself and invest in yourself to learn and move with the systems. Because if you have to put everything in Excel, then you haven't grown since 1990. You know, you haven't been able to keep up with the technology or the software changes. And if things get better, we need to really take the time that it's going to give us back by using the services or the software as it's intended.
Yeah. I read something. I'll share a story with you real quick. I read it or heard it on a podcast, but you know, the way Google operates, you know, I grew up in the Bay Area. I mean, Silicon Valley, it's there, you know, a lot of the thinking is fail fast. Mm-hmm. So operate, fail fast, find out what didn't work, what did work, but just cross that bridge as soon as you can. So fail fast. One of the ways that Google works is not only with that mentality, but they also they let their employees know that your promotion, your evaluation at the end of the year, whatever, is not going to be hindered on your failure. And so what that does is it doesn't keep, because think about this, mm-hmm. what I just said, a lot of businesses operate like that, where their employees are scared to fail because it's going to hinder their bonus. It's going to hinder their promotion. In Google, especially in that type of tech industry, they want their employees to thrive. So they tell them up front, your promotion will not be hindered based on any failures you happen. So that helps them push the envelope. Now imagine that you're the boss and you have an army of employees that are pushing the envelope, thinking of new things. Like Google Hangout, that wasn't the best success. Google Plus didn't really work, right? But without mm-hmm. all these things, they wouldn't have known. They have other things that have been absolutely successful and that has really generated a lot of revenue. In either of those situations, none of that would have happened if you had everybody just sitting down, head down, you know, doing their work and not going above and beyond what they were asked to do. Sony, the same thing, right? The PlayStation came just from people just pushing the envelope. So tech is a different industry. I get it. But you could take that same mentality in the office space. And if you have people push and thrive without the fear of failure, or I'm going to be, you know, my compensation is going to be dinged because I thought outside mm-hmm. the box. I mean, you should feel good to have employees, especially an army, if you have a lot of people that are pushing the envelope for you so that your business thrives. I'd rather do that than have everybody just doing their job and playing it safe.
Oh, I agree. And actually, that's one of the things I ask people to ask in an interview is, how do you reward risk taking?
Yeah.
Because if it's like, oh no, we don't, like, you know, it tells you a lot about the culture and, you know, whether they're going to try to play it safe or, you know, what they're going to do. And sometimes playing it safe is the right thing. If you're an accountant, you know, like we don't take risk. We don't, you know, we follow the rules, versus a company like Google, where risk is rewarded because that's how innovation happens.
I would say that along those lines, if anyone's going for an interview anytime soon, or even if you're having a review upcoming, mm-hmm. is ask the person who's interviewing, explain my job to me. In other words, how do they see it? Like, mm-hmm. what are the benchmarks? What are the KPIs? Or what is it you're going to be doing? If they can't explain it, then how do they know whether you're doing a good job?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're doing it right or not. If they have a clear vision of what it looks like, it's like, great, I'm going to do it exactly that way. Because that's how you want it. That way you'll be happy and you'll see that, yeah, he's checking the boxes and he's doing what he's supposed to do for that role or that position.
So true. So true. Trust but validate. So, all right. Well, Carlos, I think that this has been a wonderful, just conversation about trusting yourself and, you know, when to seek, the help of others, but not seek validation. And so I appreciate you sharing your experience and everything that you've gone through with our audience.
Awesome. Yeah, this is a great midday break for me. I appreciate meeting you and also being on here. We'll do it again soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, thanks everybody for tuning into Corporate Cafecito, and we'll see you next time. We'll be right back.